We're gonna complete the Mitzvah Hashem, the Mitzvah Hashem literally in a week or a week in a couple of days. We're gonna finish Chelek Hei. Chelek Vav of Mishneh Berurah is all the halachas of the Yomim Tovim, and the suggestion given out by Reb Gideon. Apparently, if David Tugunov does it in his Shein Hendon,
well,
he's not starting. Pardon?
Individuals, different personalities.
The suggestion would be to start with Hilchas Chanukah instead of normally Chelek Vav starts with Hilchas. It starts really with Hilchas Chol HaMoed, I believe. So instead of doing it according to order, we'll start with Hilchas Chanukah, so we've got a month to learn Hilchas Chanukah before that. And obviously we'll pay back. We did the same thing with Hilchas Pesach, yeah? It worked, I think, pretty well. Yeah. So that's the suggestion. So we're going to think about it. Let's think about this and discuss the next week. It's an interesting idea. Either way, I've made some photocopies of the Siyum, which is going to take place in the Shem on. As you can see, this is Moshe Baruch Katanka in Gateshead. It was kindly arranged, the Grand National Siyum. It's a great joy and simcha that we invite you to celebrate the unique Siyum on the completion of Mishneh Berurah Chelek Hei to be held on Zoom. Exact details to follow on Sunday night, 22nd of November, 7:45 till 9 p.m. Guest speaker Vom Reit, which is Magid Shin Dirshu, not sure where actually. Does anybody know him? He's author of Tkar B'Shoifa and Zekaporasi and more. Joined together with many Rabboni Magid Eshir, Chavre Shum, Isayim Shepochol Eretz Anglia, as we prepare for the upcoming Limud of Mishneh Berurah Chelek Vav. What a beautiful thing. What a beautiful thing. There's also an attached sheet of the Siyum Challenge. If anybody wants the questions over here, some questions. I don't know how many copies I've got of that, actually. I made some copies. If you want to have some, yeah. Can you just maybe, I might have some more copies. The Siyum Challenge. Do you really know Mishneh Berurah Chelek Hei? This is part of that. I have not looked at it. So please do. I'm not taking responsibility for this. But there's some questions over here. So that's that. So, gentlemen, I don't know how we're going to do this Siyum. How should we do it over Zoom? Should we all do it from our own comfort, from our homes?
No.
You've got all details.
Yes,
we should do here and with food.
There'll be food? I mean,
on Zoom, not sure. Should we do it over here together and we're going to eat at the same simultaneously?
Yeah.
Just in case, yeah. Should we do that? But how are we going to all, what?
I might arrange the food.
You can arrange the food? Watch out. Yeah, then we should definitely get together here.
Also, can we do Marib before? At 7:30?
Yeah, that's a good idea as well. Okay, very good.
Yeah, that, well, we have a
meeting. 7:45.
Yeah.
This
starts at 7:45.
Yeah, Begidini, would you join us for Marib, 7:30?
When?
On Sunday, 22nd of November, because the Siyum starts 7:45.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have, well, to confirm next week, but, okay, fine. We've, Baruch Hashem, completed the halachas of Siman Tov Kuf Chavo. We're going to do Siman Tov Kuf Chav Zayin, and then we're going to have a bit of a, are we on?
Yeah.
Great. Good, okay. So let's give a bit of a head start with regards to the Siman Tov Kuf Chav Zayin. Fascinating halachas, important halachas. The halachas of Eruv Tavshilin. So what's that all about? So page 296, Yom Tov Shechal Yoyis Be'erev Shabbos. If you've got a Yom Tov that falls on Friday, so Yom Tov falling on Friday, Thursday, Friday. Lo yivashel betchilat tzorech Shabbos. You may not cook on Friday for the sake of Shabbos. Bekadero b'fnei atzmo in a independent pot. Aval, but mevashlu kama kederes liyamtov. You may cook a few pots, numerous items of food liyamtov for the actual yamtov. Bimoisiyos in the Shabbos, and if there's leftovers, you can use them on Shabbos. So that's the concept. The concept is you may not cook on Friday for Shabbos. Yamtov Friday for Shabbos. If, however, you're making some. If you're making some for Yom Tov and his leftovers, that's all right. Okay, now comes the point. Validate Eruv, but if you're making an Eruv, Mevashelet B'tchila B'Shabbos, if you're making an Eruv, we're going to discuss further details, obviously. If you're making an Eruv, then you can cook on Friday for Shabbos. Now, how did that work exactly? Here comes the defining definition. Perish inyan ha'eruv shei vashel, you should cook, ve'yofer, and you should bake, miyom tov l'shabbos from yom tov to shabbos, im, with, mashem vashel ofer, kvar me'erev yom tov l'shem shabbos. So if you are cooking something before Shabbos, and before Yom Tov, so if let's say Yom Tov is on Thursday, Friday, so if you're cooking something on weekday before Yom Tov, and you're doing that cooking specifically for Yom Tov, so you've started the cooking process for Yom Tov, then you may cook more on Friday for Shabbos. That's what he says. Perish inin eruvu shevashel, you should cook ve'ofem yom tov l'Shabbos. You may cook from yom tov to Shabbos. Im, with, together, joint, himashevashel ofu kvam erev Shabbos v'yom tov l'shem Shabbos, together with what you have started to cook before Shabbos and before yom tov. V'nimtza, it turns out shelo yizchil melocha b'yom tov, you have not started the melocha on yom tov, rather elogom ha'osi, you have only finished it. Okay, there's obviously more explanation required, but let's start with the Mishnah over here. Hint of cotton aleph. Yom Tov Shechal Yos Be'erev Shabbos. Ve'ein Af Kimine makes no difference. Ben Yom Tov Rishon, Yom Tov Shein, Nishal Golis, whether it's the first Yom, second Yom Tov. It doesn't make a difference what Friday is. Could be first Yom, second, it doesn't make a difference. Dim Chal Yom Tov Shein Be'erev Shabbos. Gam Ken Osel Vashel Shabbos. Even in such a case, you may not cook really from Friday to Shabbos. Im Loi only, unless you've got an Erev, but the Erev she'orev me'erev Yom Tov la'rishon. Only if you've got an Erev, which means you've prepared, you've started preparation before Yom Tov. Where did that come from? Siv Kotten Gimel Mishnah Berurah. V'al the Erev mevashel b'tchilo. Kosel ha'poskim, the poskim write, the heter Erev, who af l'man da'omad ha'melach Shabbos, einas v'yom tov m'dereisa. Okay, so the point is as follows. We know cooking on Yom Tov is not so straightforward. Sometimes you may, sometimes you may not cook. So in principle, when is the most straightforward case that you can cook on Yom Tov? You can cook on Yom Tov if you're cooking for the day. So if Friday Yom Tov, if you want to cook for Yom Tov, you can cook for Yom Tov and that's it. Now, can you cook on Yom Tov for a weekday? Obviously not, you can't. It's also perhaps even deraisa. Can you cook on Yom Tov for the subsequent Shabbos? Very good. That's the only thing. So in monodereisa level, could be according to many Rishonim, Mishnah Berurah paskens like that, that you may not cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos. It's an issa dereisa. It's a Torah issa to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos. So somebody who cooks on Friday and is cooking on Friday for Shabbos over dereisa, it could be it's not dereisa. What would be the argument to say that it's not dereisa? Say you cook on Friday morning and you cook something for Shabbos. Why? What's the argument to say that it's not a Torah Issa? It's only rabbinical. What would be the argument to say that? That it's not a Torah. It cannot be a Torah transgression to cook on Yom Tov for Shabbos. What would be a svara? What would be the rationale to say that?
Cooking from Kodesh to Kodesh.
Kodesh to Kodesh, yeah.
Otherwise, how would
it work? Also true. But there's not another svara as well. That was always a svara that perhaps there's going to be people coming. It could be that there's guests coming, going to eat it. You never have confidently a situation that you can only enjoy the benefit from on Shabbos. Could be suddenly there's going to be unexpected visitors coming, knocking on the door. This is before COVID, remember? Mm-hmm. Before COVID. So, you know, people coming in and they say, you know, we want to eat something. And they say, okay, sure, come inside. And therefore, you what you planned to eat on Shabbos actually is going to end up being eaten up on that very Yom Tov on that Friday. So consequently, there's never a straightforward Issa D'Raisa for cooking on Friday to Shabbos. Very often, we're going to use the rule of Hoyil, and therefore, it's only going to be the Rabbanan. Nevertheless, it's still going to be also. And the only really permitted way to cook from Friday to Shabbos is through an Eruv Tavshilin. How does Eruv Tavshilin work? So how does it really work? The answer is, the Eruv Tavshilin works by making a start. Once I've started cooking before Yom Tov, I can continue that cooking process. Although it's physically not the same cooking, it's not the same action, it's not the same food, but I've started something, so I may continue, may continue the process by cooking on Friday for Shabbos. Yeah. Now, the answer to your good question is, it's a topic later on discussed, that what happens if you cook purely for Yom Tov and you eat everything up on Yom Tov? Yeah. So this here. Now the bottom line tells us v'mutal aniach eruv zeh afilu safik chashecha. You may make an eruv even safik chashecha, even if it's not, you're not sure if it's already nacht or not nacht. You may still be, more to be discussed on this safik chashecha will be a discussion later. It's an interesting topic. What do you use for the eruv? What do you take to use for an eruv? What do you use? What food? Very good. Baked and cooked. So what? Matzah, yeah? Is that what people, I think pretty much everybody uses?
Matzah and egg,
yeah. So that's save base as follows. Shulchan Aruch save base. Eruv zed, this Eruv oisenes will pass using bread, v'tavshin a cooked item. Or if I'm going to use your very accurate way of explaining this, a cooked item and a baked item. V'im lo yisoh elo v'tavshin levat, but if you only have got a cooked item, muta, it's still permitted. I don't think it would actually be a problem. I think it's why we. So let's look at Mishum Sif Kotten Hay, who explains a bit, but I think your question might. Let's look at Sif Kotten Hay. Because you must cook and bake from Yom Tov to Shabbos. Therefore, we make the Eruv out of something which is a bread, a cooked and a baked item. You're saying, why not fried? You know what? I think that probably fried would be fine as well. Yeah. I don't think it comes to exclude that. Yeah. It depends on which areas of halacha. In some areas of halacha, we look at it as a bit different. But either way, in this context, I think, might be perfectly fine to have something fried. Okay. We'll discuss Siv Gimel Mitzvah next week. We'll discuss in greater detail. Okay, fine. That's it for this evening, and now over to you.
Thank you very much to the Rav for giving me the opportunity to say a few words. So when I was looking at what to say, a lot of what people say on this week's Sedra is about Shidduchim. I was like, I'm not sure how shaykh that is. Well, not for me. Maybe some people here, if you have older children. But for me, I wasn't sure about talking about that, and we just learnt about Meis Ber Yom Tov Sheni. So, and it bothered me, you know, with dealing with these morbid things. I realised, how to deal the perspective from Avraham Avinu of how to deal with the death of Sarah, right? So, there's a couple of interesting Gemaras in Bava Basra which relate to this topic. So firstly, you have to look at the eternal bond, so to speak, between Avraham and Sarah, right? To appreciate that Avraham had this perspective towards death that we should learn from, of how to move forward after death, we have to appreciate the connection that Avraham and Sarah had, to appreciate how it was godless that he managed to get over Sarah's death, right? As we'll see. So basically, firstly, you have the Gemara Bava Basra, Nun Ches Ahmed Aleph, which talks about Rabbi Ben Na'ar. He made, I didn't fully understand the Gemara, but he's making burial caves. I don't know what a burial cave is. He made burial caves for the purpose so that people Kohanim could come in into the area of the Me'arav Machpelah, where they are buried. So that they wouldn't be makabel tumas meis, right? So when Rabbi Bana'ar came to the when he came in, he encountered Eliezer. Presuming it was Eliezer. Well, he wasn't alive, but I don't know what that means. He encountered Eliezer because that was a lot later after they had passed away. But Rabbi Bana'ar said, "What is Avraham doing at the moment? Obviously, in his as he was obviously passed away long ago." And Eliezer said, the Gemara says, I also didn't really understand this Gemara, but it says that Avram is lying in the arms of Sarah and she is examining his head. They were in some sort of embrace. I didn't know what that Gemara meant. Apparently the Maharal speaks at length of the eternal bond between Avram and Sarah, and that this symbolizes their eternal bond. So anyway, there was this connection between them. I'm sure there's a whole, you can many shirim or what that connection was exactly, that they were, you know, inseparable, so to speak, and inseparable in death, that they were in each other's arms, whatever that means. So with this love or eternal bond, whatever you, however you describe it, we can imagine the pain that Avram felt when he came back from Makedes Yitzhak and he found out that Sarah had died from, and there's actually an interesting machlokus about why she died. It seems to be a machlokus to me from reading it in the, I read it in the Gutnik Chumash, the Lubavitcher Chumash. He brings, Rashi says, it seems to me that Rashi holds that Yitzhak, that Sarah died because she had heard that Yitzhak had been, there'd been the Akedah Yitzhak, and she thought therefore, oh no, sorry, just the shock of hearing that Yitzhak had almost been slaughtered, just that shock had, that caused her to die from that shock. And according to the Trumas Adeshen, she had been told that he had been prepared for slaughter, and apparently another person was supposed to come along and tell Sarah Menu, oh, by the way, he was prepared for slaughter, but he wasn't actually killed in the end. But so therefore, because that other person didn't come for whatever reason, she died from the shock. There seems to be a small difference in that. So basically, so after she died, it says Veliv Kosa, right? He cried on her. Right, so there's a small, as we know, there's a small kaf, right, and the Baal HaTurim and the Rosh apparently famously tell us that this is to indicate that Avram only cried a little bit. His crying was lessened, less than it should be. The Baal HaMusa tell us that Avram's approach to life, his approach to life was that we live in the present and the future and not in the past. So. The fact that he only cried a little bit was that, you know, you cry, but you have to move on. And then it says in the next pasuk, "V'yakam Avram emel penei mesoi v'yadabe al penei ches lemor." The first thing he does as soon as she dies, he goes proactively off to buy the burial plot where she's going to be buried. So he's not wallowing in his despair and his sadness. And unfortunately, you see from personal experience, like in our family, my wife's aunt, she lost her husband. It was not the nicest circumstance, but like, if you're not living with Torah, sometimes I don't think she's ever got over the fact that her husband's passed away. She doesn't have children, whatever, so it's a bit different. But this gives us a perspective that, you know, to set your mind of, you know, okay, it's really bad what happened, but you have to live on. You can't live with that despair forever. Avram's attitude was, don't look back. Life must continue. You have to look on. And similarly, in slightly later Gemara in Bava Basra, in that would be what's afternoon. Iron Amma Base tells us about Rabbi Yeshua. What? Summer. Yeah, the Gemara over there talks about after Churban Bayis Sheni, many people decided they're not going to eat meat or drink wine anymore because they said, you know, how can? So Rabbi Yeshua said to them, "Why are you not eating meat and drinking wine?" They said, "What? How can we eat meat? There's no korbanos anymore. So how can we derive pleasure from the thing which we can't be makkiv to Hashem? Wine." We can't drink wine because we can't bring it for the nisach hayayin. So how can we drink? How can we benefit from the thing which we can't bring to Hashem? So basically, Rabbi Yeshua shlugged them up, and he said, "Well, so you're not going to eat bread? because we don't have the meal offerings. You're not going to eat fruit because we don't have Bikurim. And what about water? You're not going to drink water because we don't have the Nusach HaMayim. So they accepted, I think in the Gemara over there it said they accepted what he said. The message is that on the Churban we have to mourn, but you can't bring yourself down to the point where life stops. Life has to carry on. And that's what Avraham taught us. It's interesting, straight after that, Rabbi Yeshua then tells these people what the mourning is that we do. I think the Gemara over there says the mourning we do is when we're in our house, we leave an area of the house which is, you know, we don't put plaster there. That is the way we practically mourn for the Beis Hamikdash. Well, that's what Rabbi Yeshua said anyway. It's interesting. So, Rav Moshe Weinberger, the Rav of the Shul Eish Kodesh in America, he tells of an interesting story. In 2012, there was Hurricane Sandy in America, which was a horrific event, horrific hurricane. And his daughter told him that a friend of Rav Moshe Weinberger's daughter lost everything in her home in this hurricane. Everything was lost in her home. The home was uninhabitable. It was almost a lost cause. This daughter asked her friends how she was doing, and the woman said, "Baruch Hashem, absolutely fine." Baruch Hashem. So it's like, what do you mean your house has been destroyed, gutted? Imagine that, you know, for anyone that would be a horrific horrific event. And the woman said, well, she remembered her grandparents that they were forced to leave their homes during the time of the Holocaust, and they never came back. So at least that she's able to come back to her house at some point, you know, once it's restored. So, you know, she gave her appreciation that it's not as bad as it could be, and there is life on the other side. So that's just a few ideas that we learned from Avraham Avinu.
Very, very nice.